Some of the issues that CSPI works on is getting junk food out of schools, ridding our food supply of trans fat and sodium in processed and restaurant foods, and also improving food safety, and of course reducing consumption of sugary drinks is what we're here to talk about today. Sugary drinks are the single greatest source of calories in the American diet.
You have to click it.
Oh, here we go. Sorry about that. Sugary drinks are the single greatest source of calories in the American diet, providing approximately 10% of total average calories, and it's even more for teenagers. There are, sugary drinks are the only food or beverage shown to increase risk of overweight and obesity, and the chance of a child becoming obese increases 60% with each additional sugary drink consumed per day. And basically, sugary drinks are nutritionally worthless. Recently, the CDC issued a report that shows that half the population drinks sugary drinks on any given day, and low-income people are drinking much more than higher-income people. Also, 70% of boys aged 2 to 19 consume sugary drinks. And although consumption of carbonated soft drinks, such as soda, has been decreasing, we've seen an increase in energy drinks, sweetened teas, and fruit drinks. And sales of sugary drinks still outnumber the sales of low-calorie and no-calorie drinks. Now, when we talk about sugary drinks, we're referring to the non-diet soda, sports drinks, energy drinks, sweetened teas, and fruit drinks. Half of all added sugar comes from these sugary drinks. Now, while we believe obesity can be addressed through a wide variety of actions, one effective way is to tax sugary drinks. The higher price of sugary drinks could curb consumption and provide needed revenue. And some of that revenue could be used to implement programs to reduce obesity, especially targeting populations that are hardest hit by obesity, such as minority populations and low-income populations. Back in 2009, when the healthcare reform debate was going on, CSPI was advocating to have a soda tax included in the healthcare reform to help finance that bill. A penny per ounce would have raised $160 billion over 10 years. And this proposal generated a great deal of attention, even though it was only included in the Senate Finance Committee revenues option paper. And there weren't too many members of Congress who were willing to come out publicly in support of this proposal. It was not surprising that the soda industry spent millions of dollars to kill this proposal. During healthcare reform, industry spent 30 times more than they had spent in 2005. They also developed front groups, such as what we've seen from the tobacco industry. This is a front group developed by the American Beverage Association. It's called Americans Against Food Taxes. And basically, if you take a closer look at who the members are of this group, it's all made up of industry. Now, although the soda tax proposal was killed at the federal level, this fortunately did not deter many state legislators from introducing soda tax proposals. All of the attention at the federal level spurred interest at the state and local level, and especially state and local governments who were having difficulty with their budgets, and they were looking for ways to raise revenue, and they were also looking at ways to combat obesity. So this proposal was really a win-win for states and local governments. In 2010, 13 state proposals were introduced, as well as a number of city proposals. And again, in 2011, 16 state proposals were introduced. And we expect in 2012 to have many other state proposals reintroduced. Soda taxes is not a new issue for states. 33 states already have some type of soda tax. Many state governments have recognized that sugary drinks do not deserve to be treated for tax purposes like ordinary foods. States as diverse as Arkansas, California, New York, West Virginia, as well as cities like Chicago, have imposed special excise or sales taxes. And although these sales taxes are pretty small, they range from one to a few that are up to 7%, they do overall generate $1 billion a year. The industry has been very effective in fighting against these higher state and cities proposals introduced over the last several years, the ones which would actually have an effect on consumption. They will argue that a calorie is a calorie, so we should not pick on soda to tax. Another argument they make is that one food item is not solely responsible for the obesity problem. And while that's true, we have to remember that sugary drinks are the single greatest source of calories, and half of all sugars come from these sugary drinks. So if we're going to start somewhere, taxing sugary drinks is a good way to start to address our obesity epidemic. The industry also calls the tax regressive, which is the same argument that the tobacco industry made as well. Obesity, however, is a regressive disease, disproportionately affecting low-income and minority populations. That's why when we advocate for legislative proposals, we always advocate to include some earmark revenues that will go to help fight obesity in these disproportionately affected communities, such as these low-income and minority groups. And also the industry has claimed that a soda tax will cause job loss, but this is completely unfounded and, again, another argument that the tobacco industry has made. Soda companies produce many low-cal and no-cal products, and if a soda tax was implemented and consumption of the higher-calorie products started to decrease, they could easily market their low-cal and no-cal products. Now, even though the industry has been fighting back against a lot of these legislative proposals, we've seen some modest successes. In 2010, Colorado and Washington, D.C. eliminated the sales tax exemption for soda, and most recently, France passed a 2 euro cent, which is the equivalent as a 2-point cent per can tax. We're also seeing some movement more at the federal level, and some organizations are coming out in support of soda taxes. The Bipartisan Policy Center included it in their Debt Reduction Task Force report, as well as the Economic Policy Institute and the American Hospital Association. And Senator Rockefeller, who's the chair of the Senate Finance Health Committee, also included it in his deficit reduction proposal to have a temporary tax on soda. In addition to the soda taxes that we're seeing at state and local governments, also there's other proposals that are being adopted around the country. For example, in Boston, they recently passed a ban on the sale and advertising and promotion of sugary drinks on all city-owned property. Santa Clara and San Mateo counties in California have adopted similar proposals, as well as numerous other cities and counties around the country. And most recently, CSPI launched the Life Sweeter with Fewer Sugary Drinks Challenge. And the goal of this campaign is to reduce sugary drink consumption more than half to a maximum of 3 cans per week per person by 2020. And we're asking organizations to do similar activities as what some of these cities and proposals, cities and states and counties are doing to try to reduce consumption, ban and limit the sales in their cafeterias, charge less for healthier alternatives, and to stop or limit the sale in vending machines. And so far to date, 150 organizations have joined on to this campaign, including the American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association, the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, as well as numerous cities around the country. And if anyone is interested in learning more about this campaign, I'd be happy to talk to you after this session. Or you can go on to our Life Sweeter website, which is fewersugarydrinks.org. And now I will turn it over to Andy Goodman from New York City. Thank you.